Welcome back to Eichenbaum Acorns. This show is not about data, not about clinical decisions, not about where we're going in vitreoretinal science, but it's about the people who make our field so fun and engaging and, in my very biased opinion, unique, different, special, and better than other aspects of medicine. And I have one of those wonderful people on here with me, like our other guests on the show. This is another very good friend of mine. I'd like to introduce Christina Wang. Christina?
David, thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to be here with you. And we've done so much together over the last decade plus. I wanted to talk about some of the stuff we've done and some of the stuff that you've done. And I know that you have initiatives for women in retina and women in ophthalmology, which I want to touch on and talk about how those things have really molded our field, I would say, in the 2010s, leading into the 2020s where we are now. So just to get started, let's recap who you are and where you're at.
Well, thanks again, David, for having me. So I'm Christina Wing. I am a professor of ophthalmology and the Alice R. McPherson Retina Research Foundation chair of ophthalmology at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. I've been here now for over a
Do this
decade.
for a bit. And you took that position straight out of fellowship at Bascom Palmer, correct?
I did. And it's been
Yeah.
great here. I really love Houston, and it's been a great start to my career here at Baylor.
When I came to Baylor, almost 10 years ago, or maybe more than 10 years ago now, your department was 100% female, your division. Tell me about that. That was striking at the time and unique, and I still don't think I've seen that again.
You know, it's so interesting that you mentioned that because for the entire span that I've been here at Baylor, we've always had more female retina specialists than male retina specialists. And I think that's absolutely an anomaly, as you said, across the country, that even though the numbers are getting closer to parity, for sure in surgical retina, there's definitely still a gap there when it comes to the gender composition. So I've always felt very fortunate to have so many wonderful women colleagues here, not just in surgical retina, but actually across all of our divisions. There's a lot of women and fantastic women here in our faculty. And you know what? I do think that that is something that naturally happens just from role modeling and the mentorship that is so readily available when you surround yourself with great people, whether that's women retina specialists who you admire, or just women in general who you admire, or people like you who are so passionate about clinical research and that rubs off on you. So I always stress to our trainees, it's so important to think about who you're surrounding yourself with, because I think naturally there's going to be patterns like that that will develop where you can grow a presence, grow greatness within a division, whether that's with regards to gender or anything else.
Was that a chicken or an egg, would you say? Because from that point that I met you, you've advanced through leadership, and especially through leadership in organizations that support women and minorities in retina. What drove you to take these leadership roles in things like Envision and WIR and WIO and things like that?
Yeah, no, thanks for the question. I can vividly remember that I would very often be the only female or one of two females in the entire interview cohort of 20. That happened all across the interview season. And I remember thinking, gosh, this is so strange. Such a gap in that way, because at Willmar, where I did my ophthalmology residency, we actually once again had more women than men in my individual class. And I think the ophthalmology numbers are actually about 45, 55. They're very, very similar at this point. But you're right, in surgical retina, we haven't quite caught up in terms of the proportions yet. And so it is really fascinating to see that steadily change over a relatively short amount of time. I mean, over the past decade, even, you know, I can already see as the fellowship program director here, when I look at our individual groups that come to interview at our institution, a lot of times it's closer to 50-50. And again, I think that is still very much a grassroots movement at this point. But like I said, I think a lot of indirect effects happen just as you work with others and collaborate and open opportunities and present opportunities for others. And certainly none of us are where we are without our own mentors and shoulders that we've had to stand on. You're so right that we're very fortunate in our field to have such wonderful friends and colleagues. Nina Barakal at Bascom Palmer, has been one of those people for me. She's been such a champion for women. She really just, she's a mentor, she's a sponsor, and she is quietly also a role model. Just by watching someone like that who you admire so much and you want to emulate, that in itself, I think, is so impactful. And junior peers, whether you're already on faculty and more junior on the faculty or you're still in training, we are all impressionable in that. And I think it's people like that who've really motivated me to also be sure to pay it forward, to be sure you're always aware that you're a role model for someone else, no matter what stage of career you're in. So I've been really, really lucky, honestly, I feel, to have had lots of opportunities to get involved with awesome organizations, not just the winter section in ASRS, but especially women in ophthalmology, where I've gotten to also interact with just aspirational women from across lots of subspecialties across ophthalmology. It's really been a joy and a privilege.
Yeah, you and I have collaborated in Allergan, now AbbVie sponsored program, which was called Emerging Leaders, and now it's Emerging Experts for many years now. And we take an active role in mentorship. It's something that I know I thoroughly enjoy is promoting and building up young retina specialists, especially when they're hardworking and they want to earn it. What do you do in addition? Obviously, you do teaching and you do training. What do you do when you identify somebody who has the aspiration?
It's a great question. I think there's really two avenues that we need to think about when you've got a superstar in the making like that, where, hey, if you've got any questions, you can call me up anytime. I'm always there for you. Let me help guide you and help you make tough decisions when you hit those pivots in the road. That's really, really important. And I've been fortunate to have so many wonderful both men and women mentors to turn to. But then there's also the sponsorship part of it, right? And sponsorship is different in the sense that you're really actively opening doors for others. And both are so important. And what I mean by sponsorship is a lot of times, David, as you and I know, and you're on a bunch of different leadership. You wear a bunch of leadership hats. And so you often have a chance where people turn to you and say, Dr. Eichenbaum, who would you suggest for this opportunity? It's so important to have like a running list in your head. And I always try to think of those superstars and offer their name up because it just takes one door that opens and then you deliver excellence and you do that consistently and suddenly 100 doors are open for you.
Let's go to education. And you've been in education, like you said, for we'll call it a decade-ish. I've been practicing for a decade plus-ish. And we've seen things change. True absence of paper. Things are digital, applying to fellowship, learning, taking the notes on the even the most basic stuff in the basic clinical science series. I've seen this tremendous digital shift. What do you think for the next 1 to 2 decades in training for ophthalmology and retina is going to be the big shift? What do you foresee if you could read the tea leaves or if you could direct the change? What would education look like in 2036 to 46?
Yeah, it's a great question. And a lot of that learning has become sort of that small group discussion-based type of learning. Let's describe a patient case and learn in an indirect way. It's a different way of thinking for sure. And I've definitely seen that happen. The digital shift is absolutely certain that that's going to continue to trend. And I think that people are shifting a little bit away from sort of reading textbooks and syllabi and all the things that we used to have as part of our med school curriculum. And instead, they're learning from much more short form types of media. For example, this podcast and the podcast I've started as well. I mean, I think there's a major shift in that sense, not just for learners, but honestly for the entire medical community as a whole. So things like this podcast, I think, are really important because people want little, I guess, little nuggets or little packets of information at a time that they can listen to on the go, that they can sort of tune in for maybe 15, 20 minutes and learn a tidbit. Now, I will say, and I'd love your opinion on this, David, whether that's a better way of learning and is going to result in actually better care, better doctors, what's your take on that?
I do think that, you and I are both still learning. I'm hopefully going to learn a lot in 2026 that I didn't know in 2025. And I do find that the new modern format works well for me. I think it's because I'm a social person and I learn well when I'm learning and dialoguing with others. But I think it's going to be more difficult to identify the hard chargers. You know, it's going to be tough to separate people who just like hanging out from people who like hard work. And I can see it in my practice. I have Priya Vakharia, who's an incredible young leader, a generation behind me, and she's a gunner and a hard charger, but that probably looked different in her training than it did in my training. And I think that identifying the people who are really hard workers is just going to be a different art now, and encouraging those people and finding ways to harness that academic or professional energy is going to look different than it did when you and I were sitting up at night in a gross anatomy lab or in a lecture hall or doing multiple choice questions. In our last 4 minutes, give me one thing you're looking forward to doing in retina in 2026.
That's a great question. I know one thing I'm definitely looking forward to in 2026 is completing enrollment for the home OCT study. Protocol AO, part of DRCR, is a really, really exciting clinical trial that's happening right now. I'm very honored to serve as a protocol chair, but we've been working hard now for the past 2 years recruiting wet macular degeneration patients and looking at how they do in this study where they're randomized either to a treat and extend regimen or a home OCT guided regimen. David, I can't wait,
Good.
not fast enough, but anticipate very much hitting our enrollment target sometime this year. So at that point,
Awesome.
you know, it's funny, David, as someone who's very involved with trials, you know that it's even after you have this major monumental landmark of finishing your enrollment, now you've got to wait out
You're
that
right.
period. So it's
You're
another
now
2 years,
you got to
right?
retain them. You got to shift the
You
focus. It's you got
do.
to keep them, you know,
I
which should be
know, I
easy in
know.
AO more or less. You know, you're not like sticking painful injections in their eyes, but you're giving them a cool toy to play with. But I'm super enthusiastic with that. I'm very proud of you for sharing that very
Thank
important
you.
initiative. And I love the work that DRCR is. So thank you for doing that. And I'm excited for you to finish that enrollment too.
And I know you've been involved in so many different clinical trials, and it really is just a partnership, you know, all different angles. You're very involved in clinical pharma, and I'm really excited also of the tyrosine kinase inhibitors and how those phase three programs are going to be reading out this year.
That's
Yeah.
going to be a real, because
Oh.
the programs are very
So
different,
different, aren't
even though the
they?
drugs are philosophically more similar than they are different. The programs are very different. So I'm very interested to see what we do with those data sets. Well, thank you for coming on, Eichenbaum Acorns. You're one of the wonderful people that I enjoy spending time with. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual. And again, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And we look forward to having you very soon.
See you soon. Thanks,
Take
Christina.
care. Bye, David.